and steel, beckoning for me to stick a leg through one loop. I did as instructed, ignoring the brush of his steady hands on my thighs as I stepped through the other loop, and he began tightening and buckling things.
"She will not notice a knife, as she has knives in her cottage for eating and her work. But things that are out of place, objects that have not been there, a sword, a bow and arrow, she might sense those things."
"What about me?" He tightened a strap. Strong, capable hands. So at odds with the finery he usually wore to dazzle the rest of the world into thinking he was something else entirely.
"Do not make a sound. Do not touch anything but the object she took from me."
Rhys looked up, hands braced on my thighs.
"Bow," he'd once ordered Tamlin.
And now, here he was, on his knees before me. His eyes glinted as if he remembered it too. Had that been a part of his game? That facade? Or had it been vengeance for the horrible blood feud between them?
"If we're correct about your powers," he said, "if the bone carver wasn't lying to us, then you and the object will have the same imprint, thanks to the preserving spells I placed on it long ago. You are one and the same. She will not notice your presence so long as you touch only it. You will be invisible to her."
"She's blind?" A nod.
"But her other senses are lethal. So be quick and quiet. Find the object and run out, Feyre."
His eyes lingered on my legs, wrapping around the back of them. "And if she notices me?" His hands tightened slightly.
"Then we'll learn precisely how skilled you are." "Cruel, conniving bastard," I glared at him. Rhys shrugged. "Would you rather I locked you in the House of Wind and stuffed you with food and made you wear fine clothes and plan my parties? Go to hell. Why not get this object yourself if it's so important?"
"Because the Weaver knows me, and if I am caught, there would be a steep price.
High lords are not to interfere with her, no matter the direness of the situation. There are many treasures in her hoard, some she has kept for millennia. Most will never be retrieved, because the High Lords do not dare be caught, thanks to the laws that protect her, thanks to her wrath. Any thieves on their behalf, either they do not return, or they are never sent, for fear of it leading back to their High Lord. But you? She does not know you. You belong to every court."
"So I'm your huntress and thief?" His hand slid down to cup the backs of my knees as he said with a roguish grin,
"You are my salvation, Feyre."
Chapter 20 Rhysand winnowed us into a wood that was older, more aware than any place I'd been. The gnarled beech trees were tightly woven together, splattered and draped so thoroughly with moss and lichen that it was nearly impossible to see the bark beneath.
"Where are we?"
I breathed, hardly daring to whisper. Rhys kept his hands within casual reach of his weapons.
"In the heart of Prithian, there is a large empty territory that divides the north and south. At the center of it is our sacred mountain."
My heart stumbled, and I focused on my steps through the ferns and moss and roots.
"This forest," Rhys went on, "is on the eastern edge of that neutral territory. Here there is no High Lord. Here the law is made by who is strongest, meanest, most cunning. And the Weaver of the Wood is at the top of their food chain."
The trees groaned, though there was no breeze to shift them. No, the air here was tight and stale.
"Amarantha didn't wipe them out?"
"Amarantha was no fool," Rhys said, his face dark.
She did not touch these creatures or disturb the wood. For years, I tried to find ways to manipulate her to make that foolish mistake, but she never bought it.
And now we're disturbing her for a mere test.
He chuckled, the sound bouncing off the gray stones strewn across the forest floor like scattered marbles.
Cassian tried to convince me last night not to take you. I thought he might even punch me.
Why?
I barely knew him.
Who knows? With Cassian, he's probably more interested in fucking you than protecting you.
You're a pig.
You could, you know,
Rhys said, holding up the branch of a scrawny beech for me to slip under.
If you needed to move on in a physical sense, I'm sure Cassian would be more than happy to oblige.
It felt like a test in itself, and it pissed me off enough that I crooned,
"Then tell him to come to my room tonight."
If you survive this test.
I paused atop a little lichen-crusted rock. You seem pleased by the idea that I won't.
Quite the opposite, Vera.
He prowled to where I stood on the stone. I was almost eye level with him. The forest went even quieter, the trees seeming to lean closer, as if to catch every word.
I'll let Cassian know you're open to his advances.
Good, I said. A bit of hollowed-out air pushed against me, like a flicker of night. That power along my bones and blood stirred in answer. I made to jump off the stone, but he gripped my chin, the movement too fast to detect. His words were a lethal caress as he said,
"Did you enjoy the sight of me kneeling before you?"
I knew he could hear my heart as it ratcheted into a thunderous beat. I gave him a hateful little smirk anyway, yanking my chin out of his touch and leaping off the stone. I might have aimed for his feet, and he might have shifted out of the way just enough to avoid it.
"Isn't that all you males are good for, anyway?"
But the words were tight, near breathless. His answering smile evoked silken sheets and jasmine-scented breezes at midnight. A dangerous line. One Rhys was forcing me to walk to keep from thinking about what I was to face, about what a wreck I was inside. Anger, this flirtation, annoyance. He knew those were my crutches. What I was about to encounter then must be truly harrowing if he wanted me to go in there mad, thinking about sex, about anything but the Weaver of the Wood.
"Nice try," I said hoarsely.
Rhysan just shrugged and swaggered off into the trees ahead. Bastard. Yes, it had been to distract me, but... I stormed after him as silently as I could, intent on tackling him and slamming my fist into his spine, but he held up a hand as he stopped before a clearing. A small, whitewashed cottage with a thatched roof and half-crumbling chimney sat in the center. Ordinary. Almost mortal. There was even a well, its bucket perched on the stone lip, and a woodpile beneath one of the round windows of the cottage. No sound or light within. Not even smoke puffed from the chimney. The few birds in the forest fell quiet. Not entirely, but to keep their chatter to a minimum. And there. Faint, coming from inside the cottage, was a pretty steady humming. It might have been the sort of place I would have stopped if I were thirsty or hungry or in need of shelter for the night. Maybe that was the trap. The trees around the clearing, so close their branches nearly clawed at the thatched roof, might very well have been the bars of a cage. Rhys inclined his head toward the cottage, bowing with dramatic grace. In, out.
Don't make a sound. Find whatever object it was and snatch it from beneath a blind person's nose. And then run like hell. Mossy earth paved the way to the front door, already cracked slightly. A bit of cheese. I was the foolish mouse about to fall for it. Eyes twinkling, Reese mouthed, "Good luck." I gave him a vulgar gesture and slowly, silently made my way toward the front door. The woods seemed to monitor each of my steps. When I glanced behind, Reese was gone. He hadn't said if he'd interfere if I were in mortal peril. I probably should have asked. I avoided any leaves and stones, falling into a pattern of movement that some part of my body, some part that was not born of the High Lords, remembered. Like waking up, that's what it felt like. I passed the well. Not a speck of dirt, not a stone out of place. A perfect, pretty trap, that mortal part of me warned. A trap designed from a time when humans were prey, now laid for a smarter, immortal sort of game. I was not prey any longer, I decided, as I eased up to that door. And I was not a mouse. I was a wolf. I listened on the threshold, the rock worn as if many, many boots had passed through, and perhaps never passed back over again. The words of her song became clear now, her voice sweet and beautiful, like sunlight on a stream.
There were two sisters, they went playing, to see their father's ships come sailing, and when they came unto the sea-brim, the elder did push the younger in. A honeyed voice for an ancient, horrible song. I'd heard it before, slightly different, but sung by humans who had no idea that it had come from fairy throats. I listened for another moment, trying to hear anyone else. But there was only a clatter and thrum of some sort of device, and the weaver's song.
Sometimes she sank, and sometimes she swam, till her corpse came to the miller's dam.
My breath was tight in my chest, but I kept it even, directing it through my mouth in silent breaths. I eased open the front door, just an inch. No squeak, no whine of rusty hinges, another piece of the pretty trap, practically inviting thieves in. I peered inside when the door had opened wide enough. A large main room, with a small shut door in the back. Floor-to-ceiling shelves lined the walls, crammed with bric-a-brac. Books, shells, dolls, herbs, pottery, shoes, crystals, more books, jewels. From the ceiling and wood rafters hung all manner of chains, dead birds, dresses, ribbons, gnarled bits of wood, strands of pearls. A junk shop of some immortal hoarder. And that hoarder. In the gloom of the cottage, there sat a large spinning wheel, cracked and dulled with age. And before that ancient spinning wheel, her back to me, sat the weaver. Her thick hair was of richest onyx, tumbling down to her slender waist as she worked the wheel, snow-white hands feeding and pulling the thread around a thorn-sharp spindle. She looked young, her gray gown simple but elegant, sparkling faintly in the dim forest light through the windows as she sang in a voice of glittering gold.
But what did he do with her breastbone? He made him a viol to play on. What did he do with her finger so small? He made pegs too his viol withal.
The fiber she fed into the wheel was white, soft, like wool. But I knew, in that lingering human part of me, it was not wool. I knew that I did not want to learn what creature it had come from, who she was spinning into thread. Because on the shelf directly beyond her were cones upon cones of threads, of every color and texture. And on the shelf adjacent to her were swaths and yards of that woven thread. Woven, I realized, on the massive loom nearly hidden in the darkness near the hearth. The weaver's loom. I had come on spinning day. Would she have been singing if I had come on weaving day instead? From the strange, fear-drenched scent that came from those bolts of fabric, I already knew the answer. A wolf. I was a wolf. I stepped into the cottage, careful of the scattered debris on the earthen floor. She kept working, the wheel clattering so merrily, so at odds with her horrible song.
And what did he do with her nose ridge? Unto his vial he made a bridge. What did he do with her veins so blue? He made strings to his vial thereto.
I scanned the room, trying not to listen to the lyrics. Nothing. I felt nothing that might pull me toward one object in particular.
Perhaps it would be a blessing if I were indeed not the one to track the book. If today was not the start of what was sure to be a slew of miseries.
The weaver perched there, working. I scanned the shelves, the ceiling. Borrowed time. I was on borrowed time, and I was almost out of it.
Had Reese sent me on a fool's errand? Maybe there was nothing here. Maybe this object had been taken. It would be just like him to do that. To tease me in the woods, to see what sort of things might make my body react. And maybe I resented Tamlin enough in that moment to enjoy that deadly bit of flirtation. Maybe I was as much a monster as the female spinning before me.
But if I was a monster, then I supposed Reese was as well. Reese and I were one and the same. Beyond the power that he'd given me, it'd be fitting if Tamlin hated me too once he realized I'd truly left. I felt it then, like a tap on my shoulder. I pivoted, keeping one eye on the weaver and the other on the room as I wove through the maze of tables and junk, like a beacon, a bit of light laced with his half-smile. It tugged me.
Hello, it seemed to say. Have you come to claim me at last?
Yes, yes, I wanted to say, even as a part of me wished it were otherwise. The weaver sang behind me.
What did he do with her eyes so bright? On his vial he set a first light. What did he do with her tongue so rough? 'Twill the new till, and it spoke enough.
I followed that pulse, toward the shelf lining the wall beside the hearth. Nothing, and nothing on the second, but the third, right above my eyeline. There. I could almost smell his salt and citrus scent. The bone carver had been correct. I rose on my toes to examine the shelf. An old letter knife, books in leather that I did not want to touch or smell, a handful of acorns, a tarnished crown of ruby and jasper, and a ring. A ring of twisted strands of gold and silver, flecked with pearl, and set with a stone of deepest solid blue. Sapphire, but different. I'd never seen a sapphire like that, even at my father's offices.
This one, I could have sworn that in the pale light, the lines of a six-pointed star radiated across the round, opaque surface.
Reese. This had Reese written all over it.
He'd sent me here for a ring?
The weaver sang.
Then bespake the treble string, oh, yonder is my father the king.
I watched her for another heartbeat, gauging the distance between the shelf and the open door. Grabbed the ring, and I could be gone in a heartbeat. quick, quiet, calm.
Then bespake the second string, "Oh, yonder sits my mother the queen."
I dropped a hand toward one of the knives strapped to my thighs. When I got back to Rhys,
maybe I'd stab him in the gut.
That fast, the memory of phantom blood covered my hands. I knew how it'd feel to slide my dagger through his skin and bones and flesh. Knew how the blood would dribble out. How he'd groan in pain. I shut out the thought, even as I could feel the blood of those fairies soaking that human part of me that hadn't died and belonged to no one but my miserable self.
Then bespake the strings all three, "Yonder is my sister that drowned me."
My hand was quiet as a final dying breath as I plucked the ring from the shelf. The weaver stopped singing. Chapter 21. I froze, the ring now in the pocket of my jacket. She'd finished the last song.
Maybe she'd start another. Maybe.
The spinning wheel slowed. I backed a step toward the door, then another. Slower and slower, each rotation of the ancient wheel longer than the last. Only 10 steps to the door. 5. The wheel went round one last time, so slow I could see each of the spokes.
2.
I turned for the door as she lashed out with a white hand, gripping the wheel and stopping it wholly. The door before me snicked shut. I lunged for the handle, but there was none. Window. Get to the window.
"Who is in my house?"
she said softly. Fear. Undiluted, unbroken fear slammed into me, and I remembered. I remembered what it was to be human and helpless and weak. I remembered what it was to want to fight to live. To be willing to do anything to stay breathing. I reached the window beside the door, sealed. No latch, no opening. Just glass that was not glass, solid and impenetrable. The weaver turned her face toward me. Wolf or mouse, it made no difference because I became no more than an animal, sizing up my chance of survival. Above her young, supple body, beneath her black, beautiful hair, her skin was gray, wrinkled and sagging and dry. And where her eyes should have gleamed, instead lay rotting black pits. Her lips had withered to nothing but deep, dark lines around a hole full of jagged stumps of teeth, like she had gnawed on too many bones. And I knew she would be gnawing on my bones soon if I did not get out. Her nose, perhaps once pert and pretty, now half caved in, flared as she sniffed in my direction.
"Who are you?"
she said in a voice that was so young and lovely. "Out, out! I had to get out! There was another way. One suicidal, reckless way. I did not want to die. I did not want to be eaten. I did not want to go into that sweet darkness." The weaver rose from her little stool, and I knew my borrowed time had run out.
"What is like all?"
she mused, taking one graceful step toward me.
"But unlike all."
I was a wolf, and I bit when cornered. I lunged for the sole candle burning on the table in the center of the room and hurled it against the wall of woven thread, against all those miserable, dark bolts of fabric. Woven bodies, skins, lives. Let them be free. Fire erupted, and the weaver's shriek was so piercing I thought my head might shatter.
thought my blood might boil in its veins. She dashed for the flames, as if she'd put them out with those flawless white hands, and her mouth of rotted teeth open and screaming like there was nothing but black hell inside her. I hurtled for the darkened hearth, for the fireplace and the chimney above. A tight squeeze, but wide enough for me. I didn't hesitate as I grabbed onto the ledge and hauled myself up, arms buckling. Immortal strength, it only got me so far, and I'd become so weak, so malnourished. I had let them make me weak, bent to it like some wild horse broken to the bit. The soot-stained bricks were loose, uneven, perfect for climbing. Faster! I had to go faster! But my shoulders scraped against the brick, and it reeked in here, like carrion and burned hair, and there was an oily sheen on the stone like cooked fat. The weaver's screaming was cut short as I was halfway up her chimney, sunlight and trees almost visible, every breath a near sob. I reached for the next brick, fingernails breaking as I hauled myself up so violently that my arms barked in protest against the squeezing of the stone around me, and I was stuck. Stuck, as the weaver hissed from within her house. "What little mouse is climbing about in my chimney?" I had just enough room to look down as the weaver's rotted face appeared below. She put that milk-white hand on the ledge, and I realized how little room there was between us. My head emptied out. I pushed against the grip of the chimney but couldn't budge. I was going to die here. I was going to be dragged down by those beautiful hands and ripped apart and eaten. Maybe while I was still alive, she'd set that hideous mouth on my flesh and gnaw and tear and bite and... Black panic crushed in, and I was again trapped under a nearby mountain, in a muddy trench, the Midgard worm barreling for me. I'd barely escaped, barely. I couldn't breathe, couldn't breathe, couldn't breathe. The weaver's nails scratched against the brick as she took a step up. "No, no, 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 no," I kicked and kicked against the bricks. "Did you think you could steal and flee, thief?" I would have preferred the Midgard worm, would have preferred those massive, sharp teeth to her jagged stumps. "Stop." The word came out of the darkness of my mind, and the voice was my own. "Stop," it said. I said. "Breathe. Think." The weaver came closer, brick crumbling under her hands. She'd climb up like a spider, like I was a fly in her web. "Stop." And that word quieted everything. I mouthed it. "Stop, stop, stop. Think." I had survived the worm, survived Amarantha, and I had been granted gifts, considerable gifts, like strength. I was strong. I slammed a hand against the chimney wall as low as I could get. The weaver hissed at the debris that rained down. I smashed my fist again, rallying that strength. I was not a pet, not a doll, not an animal. I was a survivor, and I was strong. I would not be weak or helpless again. I would not. Could not be broken, tamed. I pounded my fist into the bricks over and over, and the weaver paused. Paused long enough for the brick I'd loosened to slide free into my waiting palm, and for me to hurl it at her hideous, horrible face as hard as I could. Bone crunched and she roared, black blood spraying. But I rammed my shoulders into the sides of the chimney, skin tearing beneath my leather. I kept going, 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 until I was stone-breaking stone, until nothing and no one held me back and I was scaling the chimney. I didn't dare stop, not as I reached the lip and hauled myself out, tumbling onto the thatched roof.
which was not thatched with hay at all, but hair. And with all that fat lining the chimney, all that fat now gleaming on my skin, the hair clung to me, in clumps and strands and tufts. Bile rose, but the front door banged open, a shriek following it. No, not that way, not to the ground. Up, up, up. A tree branch hung low and close by, and I scrambled across that heinous roof, trying not to think about who and what I was stepping on, what clung to my skin, my clothes. A heartbeat later, I jumped onto the waiting branch, scrambling into the leaves and moss as the weaver screamed, "Where are you?" But I was running through the tree, running toward another one nearby. I leaped from branch to branch, bare hands tearing on the wood. Where was Rhysand? Farther and farther I fled, her screams chasing me, though they grew ever distant.
Where are you? Where are you? Where are you?
And then, lounging on a branch in a tree before me, one arm draped over the edge, Rhysand drawled, "What the hell did you do?" I skidded to a stop, breathing raw. I thought my lungs might actually be bleeding. "You," I hissed. But he raised a finger to his lips and winnowed to me, grabbing my waist with one hand and cupping the back of my neck with his other as he spirited us away to Valaris, to just above the House of Wind. We free fell, and I didn't have breath to scream as his wings appeared, spreading wide, and he curved us into a steady glide, right through the open windows of what had to be a war room. Cassian was there, in the middle of arguing with Amran about something. Both froze as we landed on the red floor. There was a mirror on the wall behind them, and I glimpsed myself long enough to know why they were gaping. My face was scratched and bloody, and I was covered in dirt and grease, boiled fat, and mortar dust. The hair stuck to me, and I smelled.
"You smell like barbecue,"
Amran said, cringing a bit. Cassian loosened the hand he'd wrapped around the fighting knife at his thigh. I was still panting, still trying to gobble down breath. The hair clinging to me scratched and tickled, and...
"You kill her?" Cassian said.
"No," Rhys answered for me, loosely folding his wings.
"But given how much the weaver was screaming, I'm dying to know what Feyre Darling did."
Grease. I had the grease and hair of people on me. I vomited all over the floor. Cassian swore, but Amran waved a hand and it was instantly gone, along with the mess on me. But I could feel the ghost of it there, the remnants of people, the mortar of those bricks.
"She detected me somehow," I managed to say, slumping against the large black table and wiping my mouth against the shoulder of my leather. "And locked the doors and windows, so I had to climb out through the chimney. I got stuck," I added as Cassian's brows rose, "and when she tried to climb up, I threw a brick at her face."
Silence. Amran looked to Rhysand.
"And where were you?"
"Waiting, far enough away that she couldn't detect me."
I snarled at him.
"I could have used some help."
"You survived," he said, "and found a way to help yourself." From the hard glimmer in his eye, I knew he was aware of the panic that had almost gotten me killed, either through mental shields I'd forgotten to raise, or whatever anomaly in our bond. He'd been aware of it, and let me endure it. Because it had almost gotten me killed, and I'd be no use to him if it had happened when it mattered, with the book. Exactly like he'd said.
"That's what this was also about," I spat.
Not just this stupid ring.
I reached into my pocket, slamming the ring down on the table.
Or my abilities, but if I can master my panic.
Cassian swore again, his eyes on that ring. Amryn shook her head, sheet of dark hair swaying.
Brutal, but effective.
Rhys only said, Now you know that you can use your abilities to hunt your objects, and thus track the book at the summer court and master yourself.
You're a prick, Rhysand, Cassian said quietly.
Rhys merely tucked his wings in with a graceful snap.
You'd do the same.
Cassian shrugged, as if to say, fine, he would.
I looked at my hands, my nails bloody and cracked, and I said to Cassian,
I want you to teach me how to fight, to get strong, if the offer to train still stands.
Cassian's brows rose, and he didn't bother looking to Rhys for approval.
You'll be calling me a prick pretty damn fast if we train. And I don't know anything about training humans, how breakable your bodies are. Were, I mean, he added with a wince. We'll figure it out.
I don't want my only option to be running, I said.
Running, Amryn cut in, kept you alive today.
I ignored her.
I want to know how to fight my way out. I don't want to have to wait on anyone to rescue me.
I faced Rhys, crossing my arms.
Well, have I proved myself?
But he merely picked up the ring and gave me a nod of thanks.
It was my mother's ring.
As if that were all the explanation and answers owed.
How'd you lose it? I demanded.
I didn't.
My mother gave it to me as a keepsake, then took it back when I reached maturity, and gave it to the Weaver for safekeeping.
Why?
So I wouldn't waste it.
Nonsense and idiocy and... I wanted a bath. I wanted quiet and a bath. The need for those things hit me strong enough that my knees buckled.
I barely looked at Rhys before he grabbed my hand, flared his wings, and had us soaring back through the windows. We free fell for 5 thunderous, wild heartbeats before he winnowed to my bedroom in the townhouse. A hot bath was already running. I staggered to it, exhaustion hitting me like a physical blow, when Rhys said,
And what about training your other gifts?
Through the rising steam from the tub, I said,
I think you and I would shred each other to bits.
Oh, we most definitely will.
He leaned against the bathing room threshold.
But it wouldn't be fun otherwise.
Consider our training now officially part of your work requirements with me. A jerk of the chin. Go ahead. Try to get past my shields.
I knew which ones he was talking about.
I'm tired. The bath will go cold.
I promise it'll be just as hot in a few moments.
Or if you mastered your gifts, you might be able to take care of that yourself.
I frowned, but took a step toward him, then another, making him yield a step, 2, into the bedroom. The phantom grease and hair clung to me. Reminded me what he'd done. I held his stare, those violet eyes twinkling.
You feel it, don't you? He said over the burbling and chittering garden birds. Your power, stalking under your skin, purring in your ear.
So what if I do?
A shrug.
I'm surprised Ianthe didn't carve you up on an altar to see what that power looks like inside you.
What precisely is your issue with her?
I find the High Priestesses to be a perversion of what they once were, once promised to be, Ianthe among the worst of them.
A knot twisted in my stomach.
Why do you say that?
Get past my shields and I'll show you.
So that explained the turn in conversation. A taunt. Bait. Holding his stare, I let myself fall for it. I let myself imagine that line between us. A bit of braided light. And there was his mental shield at the other end of the bond. Black and solid and impenetrable. No way in. However I'd slipped through before, I had no idea. I've had enough tests for the day. Reese crossed the 2 feet between us.
The High Priestesses have burrowed into a few of the courts. Dawn, day, and winter mostly. They've entrenched themselves so thoroughly that their spies are everywhere. Their followers near fanatic with devotion. And yet, during those 50 years, they escaped. They remained hidden. I would not be surprised if Ianthe sought to establish a foothold in the Spring Court.
You mean to tell me they're all black-hearted villains?
No.
Some, yes.
Some are compassionate and selfless and wise. But there are some who are merely self-righteous. Though those are the ones that always seem the most dangerous to me.
And Ianthe?
A knowing sparkle in his eyes.
He really wouldn't tell me. He'd dangle it before me like a piece of meat. I lunged, blindly, wildly, but I sent my power lashing down that line between us, and yelped as it slammed against his inner shields, the reverberations echoing in me as surely as if I'd hit something with my body. Reese chuckled, and I saw fire.
Admirable. Sloppy, but an admirable attempt.
Panting a bit, I seethed. But he said, "Just for trying," and took my hand in his. The bond went taut, that thing under my skin pulsing, and there was dark, and the colossal sense of him on the other side of his mental barricade of black adamant. That shield went on forever. The product of half a millennia of being hunted, attacked, hated. I brushed a mental hand against that wall. Like a mountain cat, arching into a touch, it seemed to purr, and then relaxed its guard. His mind opened for me. An antechamber, at least. A single space he'd carved out, to allow me to see. A bedroom carved from obsidian. A mammoth bed of ebony sheets, large enough to accommodate wings. And on it, sprawled in nothing but her skin, lay Ianthe. I reeled back, realizing it was a memory and Ianthe was in his bed, in his court beneath that mountain. Her full breasts peaked against the chill.
"There is more," Reese's voice said from far away as I struggled to pull out.
But my mind slammed into the shield, the other side of it. He'd trapped me in here.
"You kept me waiting," Ianthe sulked.
The sensation of hard, carved wood digging into my back, Rhysand's back as he leaned against the bedroom door. "Get out." Ianthe gave a little pout, bending her knee and shifting her legs wider, baring herself to him.
"I see the way you look at me, High Lord. You see what you want to see."
We said. The door opened beside him.
"Get out."
A coy tilt of her lips. "I heard you like to play games." Her slender hand drifted low, trailing past her belly button.
"I think you'll find me a diverting playmate."
Icy wrath crept through me, him, as he debated the merits of splattering her on the walls and how much of an inconvenience it'd cause. She'd hounded him relentlessly, stalked the other males, too,
Azrael had left last night because of it. And Moore was about one more comment away from snapping her neck. I thought your allegiance lay with other courts. His voice was so cold, the voice of the High Lord.
My alliance lies with the future of Prithian, with the true power in this land. Her fingers slid between her legs and halted.
Her gasp cleaved the room as he sent a tendril of power blasting for her, pinning that arm to the bed, away from herself.
"Do you know what a union between us could do for Prithian? For the world?"
she said, eyes devouring him still. "You mean yourself."
"Our offspring could rule Prithian."
Cruel amusement danced through him.
"So you want my crown and for me to play stud?"
She tried to writhe her body, but his power held her. "I don't see anyone else worthy of the position."
She'd be a problem, now and later. He knew it. Kill her now. End the threat before it began. Face the wrath of the other high priestesses, or... see what happened. Get out of my bed, get out of my room, and get out of my court. He released his power's grip to allow her to do so.
Ianthe's eyes darkened, and she slithered to her feet, not bothering with her clothes, draped over his favorite chair.
Each step toward him had her generous breasts bobbing. She stopped barely a foot away.
"You have no idea what I can make you feel, High Lord."
She reached a hand for him, right between his legs. His power lashed around her fingers before she could grab him. He crunched the power down, twisting.
Ianthe screamed.
She tried backing away, but his power froze her in place. So much power, so easily controlled, roiling around her, contemplating ending her existence like an asp surveying a mouse. Rhys leaned close to breathe into her ear.
"Don't ever touch me. Don't ever touch another male in my court."
His power snapped bones and tendons, and she screamed again.
"Your hand will heal," he said, stepping back.
"The next time you touch me or anyone in my lands, you will find that the rest of you will not fare so well."
Tears of agony ran down her face, the effect wasted by the hatred lighting her eyes.
"You will regret this," she hissed. He laughed softly, a lover's laugh, and a flicker of power had her thrown onto her ass in the hallway. Her clothes followed a heartbeat later. Then the door slammed. Like a pair of scissors through a taut ribbon, the memory was severed, the shield behind me fell, and I stumbled back, blinking.
"Rule one," Rhys told me, his eyes glazed with the rage of that memory. "Don't go into someone's mind unless you hold the way open. A Daemadi might leave their minds spread wide for you and then shut you inside, turn you into their willing slave."
A chill went down my spine at the thought. But what he'd shown me.
"Rule two," he said, his face hard as stone.
When was that?" I blurted.
I knew him well enough not to doubt its truth.
"When did that happen between you?"
The ice remained in his eyes. 100 years ago.
At the Court of Nightmares. I allowed her to visit after she'd begged for years, insisting she wanted to build ties between the Night Court and the priestesses. I'd heard rumors about her nature, but she was young and untried, and I hoped that perhaps a new High Priestess might indeed be the change her order needed. It turned out that she was already well trained by some of her less benevolent sisters.
I swallowed hard, my heart thundering.
She didn't act that way.
Lucian.
Lucian had hated her, had made vague, vicious allusions to not liking her, to being approached by her.
I was going to throw up. Had she pursued him like that? Had he been forced to say yes because of her position? And if I went back to the Spring Court one day, how would I ever convince Tamlin to dismiss her? What if, now that I was gone, she was...
Rule two, Rhys finally went on. Be prepared to see things you might not like. Only 50 years later, Amarantha had come, and done exactly to Rhys what he'd wanted to kill Ianthe for. He'd let it happen to him. To keep them safe. To keep Azrael and Cassian from the nightmares that would haunt him forever. From enduring any more pain than what they'd suffered as children. I lifted my head to ask him more, but Rhys had vanished. Alone, I peeled off my clothes, struggling with the buckles and straps he'd put on me. When had it been? An hour or two ago? It felt as if a lifetime had passed, and I was now a certified book tracker, it seemed. Better than a party-planning wife for breeding little high lords. What Ianthe had wanted to make me, to serve whatever agenda she had. The bath was indeed hot, as he'd promised, and I mulled over what he'd shown me, seeing that hand again and again reach between his legs, the ownership and arrogance in that gesture. I shut out the memory, the bath water suddenly cold. Chapter 22. Word still hadn't come from the summer court the following morning, so Rhysand made good on his decision to bring us to the mortal realm.
"What does one wear, exactly, in the human lands?"
Moore said from where she sprawled across the foot of my bed. For someone who claimed to have been out drinking and dancing until the mother knew when, she appeared unfairly perky. Cassian and Azrael, grumbling and wincing over breakfast, had looked like they'd been run over by wagons, repeatedly. Some small part of me wondered what it would be like to go out with them, to see what Velaris might offer at night. I rifled through the clothes in my armoire. "Layers," I said. "They cover everything up. The décolletage might be a little daring depending on the event, but... everything else gets hidden beneath skirts and petticoats and nonsense."
"Sounds like the women are used to not having to run. Or fight. I don't remember it being that way 500 years ago."
I paused on an ensemble of turquoise with accents of gold. Rich, bright, regal. Even with the wall, the threat of fairies remained, so surely practical clothes would have been necessary to run. To fight any that crept through. I wonder what changed. I pulled out the top and pants for her approval. Moore merely nodded. No commentary like Ianthe might have provided. No beatific intervention. I shoved away the thought, and the memory of what she'd tried to do to Rhys, and went on. "Nowadays, most women wed, bear children, and then plan their children's marriages. Some of the poor might work in the fields, and a rare few are mercenaries or hired soldiers, but the wealthier they are, the more restricted their freedoms and roles become. You'd think that money would buy you the ability to do whatever you pleased."
"Some of the High Fae," Moore said, pulling at an embroidered thread in my blanket, "are the same."
I slipped behind the dressing screen to untie the robe I'd donned moments before she'd entered to keep me company while I prepared for our journey today. "In the Court of Nightmares," she went on, that voice falling soft and a bit cold once more, "females are prized. Our virginity is guarded, then sold off to the highest bidder.
whatever male will be of the most advantage to our families. I kept dressing, if only to give myself something to do while the horror of what I began to suspect slithered through my bones and blood. I was born stronger than anyone in my family, even the males, and I couldn't hide it, because they could smell it. The same way you can smell a High Lord's heir before he comes to power, the power leaves a mark, an echo. When I was 12, before I bled, I prayed it meant no male would take me as a wife, that I would escape what my elder cousins had endured. Loveless, sometimes brutal marriages. I tugged my blouse over my head and buttoned the velvet cuffs at my wrists before adjusting the sheer turquoise sleeves into place. But then I began bleeding a few days after I turned 17, and the moment my first blood came, my power awoke in full force, and even that God's damned mountain trembled around us. But instead of being horrified, every single ruling family in the Hewn City saw me as a prize mare. Saw that prize and wanted it bred into their bloodline over and over again. "What about your parents?" I managed to say, slipping my feet into the midnight blue shoes. It'd be the end of winter in the mortal lands. Most shoes would be useless. Actually, my current ensemble would be useless, but only for the moments I'd be outside, bundled up. My family was beside themselves with glee. They could have their pick of an alliance with any of the other ruling families. My pleas for a choice in the matter went unheard. She got out, I reminded myself. Moore got out, and now lived with people who cared for her, who loved her. "The rest of the story," Moore said as I emerged, "is long and awful, and I'll tell you some other time. I came in here to say I'm not going with you to the mortal realm." "Because of how they treat women?" Her rich brown eyes were bright, but calm.
"When the queens come, I will be there. I wish to see if I recognize any of my long-dead friends in their faces, but I don't think I would be able to behave with any others."
"Did Rhys tell you not to go?" I said tightly.
"No," she said, snorting. "He tried to convince me to come, actually. He said I was being ridiculous. But Cassian, he gets it. The two of us wore him down last night."
My brows rose a bit. Why, they'd gone out and gotten drunk, no doubt, to ply their High Lord with alcohol.
Moore shrugged at the unasked question in my eyes.
"Cassian helped Rhys get me out, before either had the real rank to do so. For Rhys, getting caught would have been a mild punishment, perhaps a bit of social shunning, but Cassian, he risked everything to make sure I stayed out of that court. And he laughs about it, but he believes he's a low-born bastard, not worthy of his rank or life here. He has no idea that he's worth more than any other male I met in that court, and outside of it. Him and Azriel, that is."
Yes, Azriel, who kept a step away, whose shadows trailed him and seemed to fade in her presence. I opened my mouth to ask about her history with him, but the clock chimed 10. Time to go. My hair had been arranged before breakfast in a braided coronet atop my head, a small diadem of gold, flecked with lapis lazuli, set before it. Matching earrings dangled low enough to brush the sides of my neck, and I picked up the twisting gold bracelets that had been left on the dresser, sliding one onto either wrist. Moore made no comment, and I knew that if I had worn nothing but my undergarments, she would have told me to own every inch of it. I turned to her. "I'd like my sisters to meet you. Maybe not today, but if you ever feel like it." She cocked her head. I rubbed the back of my bare neck. "I want them to hear your story.
and know that there is a special strength. As I spoke, I realized I needed to hear it,